Ready?
This is Christian from the Most High Show. And today we're going to be talking about the ego.
Wait. The ego is not your amigo, right?
The ego is not your amigo.
Okay.
And sitting with me is Mitchell. Say hello, Mitchell, for the podcast.
Hello.
Yeah, talk on the mic.
I'm here. Can you hear me now? All right, there we go.
So this is not ironic that we're filming ourselves talking
about the ego.
The ego. Is that like it's irony?
Is it?
A little bit. As I look at myself, filming myself. Yeah. Hey, what's up, Leslie?
Hey, guys.
How you doing? So, when you think about the ego, right? Usually you think of someone who's like egotistical or egomaniac, someone who's larger than life. Maybe they're rich or have a lot of power and control. Somebody walks around, walks in a room, control the room, center of attention. Someone who's very egotistical. And so what I kind of want to assert is that I think our ego is a little trickier than that. It's a little slicker, right? So what I wrote is that the ego has the ability to disguise itself as humility, piety, goodness, selflessness. And what I recently kind of came to confess really is that ego has the ability to masquerade as God. And so what was really, for me personally, kind of coming to this realization that the ego can masquerade as God was, I went through a certain situation when we bought the house that we're in right now. And coming into this financial responsibility that I was going to have to now, you know, pay for a house. I owned a house now, and it was a big deal that I went and took a job. And I took a job at a church, and I told myself, or at least the narrative that I kind of had made up, was that I had, it's very distracting, like Mitchell's doing all kinds of stuff for the live. But I told myself that, oh, well, you know, I feel like God's leading me to go get this job. It really was the narrative I told myself. And then that job just, you know, just didn't work out. And so then I told myself that, oh, well, God's given me permission to now move on, right? And if I'm honest, brutally honest with myself, as I look back on those two decisions, specifically, I'm kind of realizing that, you know what? I bought a house and I freaked out and I wanted to get a steady check. And then I had the job and it didn't work out because I've been independent. I own my own business and I don't want to, I don't like people telling me what to do. Right. So when I have an honest assessment of those two decisions, I realize, oh my gosh, my ego was masquerading as God. That my ego was in this conversation with me as if it was my higher power. But the ego liked the idea of putting me in a position where there was some finances coming in, right? Because the ego is very eye-centered. It's very centered on self-preservation, right? So it's like, okay, here's the situation. It's kind of scary. So let's get some security. And then it's like, oh, well, that security comes with a cost of having to actually listen to what the people who are paying you. And so then the ego's like, I don't want that, you know? And I'm not distinct, me and my ego, right? We're all in the same. But it was very interesting. And what's really probably the most interesting is that if I can do that with those two decisions, right? What does that mean for the rest of my faith? And what does that mean for the rest of my decisions? You know, have I ever truly felt the leading of my higher power? That's really what's called into question. Just being 100, right?
100.
Yeah.
So when you talk about that, it's kind of mind blowing to me the way you're looking at it. And it reminds me, and I was reminded when I was looking over this subject, that I don't really know completely what's going on here. So I can tell you what
I hear, like what, like in the podcast?
No, like with the ego.
Right.
So I did a little research and looked into the definition of the ego. And it seemed like it was kind of a mixed bag in that some of it was potentially helpful for self-esteem.
Right.
And so I guess it takes a filter to look at that, basically saying, well, you know, who wrote that? So anyway, I got a little overwhelmed with that and kind of brought it back to what my understanding of the ego was.
Right. Yeah. It can get murky when you start looking around to different interpretations. Like,
yeah, like
there's
Wikipedia.
A Freudian breakdown of what the ego is. And so what we're talking about when we talk about the ego, and I kind of like either maybe ego or false self, you know, or selfishness, right? So words matter, and the words we choose will matter in whatever arena, right? So for Christians, we might call the ego, we might call it our flesh, right? We might say our flesh is this self-centered, me, I, self-preservation, which, like you said, in and of itself is not a bad thing. But then you may think of like in recovery, it's like, I think there's like a really good adage, which is if it's selfish, like to check your motives, like if you're doing something and maybe it's not necessarily hurting anybody, there's no direct effect on anyone, but is it selfish? Are you being selfish? And what are your motives? To me, that's the play of the ego. Does that help?
So I understand what you're saying, and I think my understanding of this is limited, so I'm going to take it back to basics.
Yeah.
I can remember when I was very likely the most selfish and the most self-centered, and that was a point in time where I was getting loaded 24/7, and that started late high school, early college.
Yeah.
I would get loaded when I'd wake up, and I would get loaded until I went to sleep. And there were times where, you know, I might have taken a little break. You know, I held jobs, various jobs here and there. And but I remember being very self-centered and really not considering other people's well-being unless it affected me.
Right.
So I imagine when people are talking about ego, or being an egomaniac, that I probably fit that definition.
Right.
And it's hard for me to tell you now when I'm being self-centered and when I'm not, because sometimes I don't know.
Right.
But I feel like I've gotten into a pattern of being less self-centered and being more aware of the way I think now and I behave. I think I more quickly catch on to behavior that I'd call old behavior.
Yeah.
That is still you see it coming up.
Right.
I see it happening. And so
you can stop it.
For me, I've had to seek out, we'll call them spiritual mentors.
Right.
People that I talk to on a very regular basis, if not daily, weekly. You know, I've got a group of them that have come into my life, and we talk about things so that they can help me see more objectively what's going on. And a lot of times I don't know when I'm doing something that's probably self-centered.
Right.
And so I was told pretty early on in this recovery process that alcoholics and addicts and people who suffer from these self-destructive behaviors, we take self-will and it runs riot. So whereas a normal person, we'll say normal, may have a bit of an ego, and it may be a mixed bag where some of it might not be ideal and some of it certainly maybe even healthy. Maybe it just is part of their self-esteem. I don't know. I'm speculating. Right. For me, it just went off the deep end. So it all became about me. And conversely, my self-esteem was probably pretty low. So I had to do these things, have these behaviors, whether it was attention seeking or pleasure seeking behaviors.
To compensate for the...
to make myself feel better, because I wanted you to look at me and say, oh, he's got this. Oh, he's with that person. Right. Oh, he's doing this thing.
Right.
And really inside, unless I have that thing mm-hmm. that I want you to see at that moment, I'm probably not feeling great about myself. So I need to do it again and right. again and again. And that almost killed me.
Yeah. 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 So I like what you said, where, you know, we don't really realize when the ego in this sense is taken over. We don't really see it. Like me, like when I look back at those two decisions, at the time I wholeheartedly thought, I was proceeding with divine direction. Right. And maybe hindsight's 20/20, but when I look back, I'm going, that was my ego was playing around. My ego wanted to protect itself. It wanted to protect image. It didn't want to risk being in a tight spot. And then when it didn't like the way it was being treated, it was like, we need to get up out of this situation. And so my ego was really, really manipulating the situation. So there was some things that I found this online. It's from Simple Strategies, simplelifestrategies.com. And when we do this, we post all the content that we find and we post it onto the page of the podcast so you can look at these articles and stuff yourself. But these are really good 10 surefire signs that your ego is in control. Right? Sounds really like bloggy, like BuzzFeed-ish. But it's really good. If you feel elevated from gossiping about other people's flaws.
Yeah, that's an uncomfortable reality to face when you realize you're doing that and you're trying to live a spiritual life and grow spiritually. It's one thing if you're getting loaded in doing that and you're not really aware of what's actually happening, but it's another thing to be aware of that. And that's a painful one that I've been working on for years. And sometimes I do a good job of it, and other times maybe not so much.
Right. And we like to take people and put them in specific categories. And then when we categorize them, then we can compare them to ourselves and we can either feel better or worse about them. And that's one of the other signs. Another one is you find yourself in a feisty discussion and you can't back down.
Like on Facebook?
Or anywhere. And you have to win the argument. So I recently was in a fight with my wife. Yeah. That shit happens.
That's awful.
Yeah. And I was communicating with a friend and he said, you know, sometimes we have to let go of our, desire to be right. And that was like, oh man, I knew at that moment I needed to apologize because that's what I was holding on to. I wanted to be right. I wanted to be. So it was like, no matter what it took, you know, I was going to be right. And so that's a very good sign that, hey, your ego is at play here. Another one is you constantly compare yourself to other people who you feel are better than you. That's what I mean by the ego being tricky, right? We think of it as like, well, I'm better than everybody else, but this is a good example of saying your ego is kind of taking control when you're looking at other people and you're saying that person is better than me. Cause, there's a really good quote by Richard Rohr. He's an author. And one of the things that he says is, and I believe this to be true, is that your true self, your divine self, your sacred self, the person you are in Christ, whatever definition you want to use, that true self cannot be offended, right?
Well, if you have nothing left to defend.
Because that true self is connected to the very fabric of life, right? The creator, the everything, right? So that self cannot be offended. So anytime you feel offense, it's your ego.
It's a very good point. One of the most spiritually advanced men that I know mm-hmm. is happy. He's humble. He's of service, and you rarely ever see him upset or agitated. And he'll say, when people say things that might be offensive,
yeah,
I have nothing left to defend.
Wow.
And he'll smile. And I'm like, man, I got some work to do. So I can get offended pretty easily.
We need to have him over here talking about this, though.
I think we might be able to recruit him.
Yeah.
And one thing before I forget.
There's nothing left for me to defend.
Nothing.
Right.
If you're living on the right path. Right. And you're doing, you know, if you're congruent, if what you say and what you think and what you do is all in line.
Wow.
What are you going to defend?
That's a really good, I like that definition.
I haven't met too many people that live like that, but I know at least one person, and it's not me, but I'm working on it.
Right.
Before I forget, it's often been said that alcoholics and addicts, and I'll add very likely other people who suffer from what I would consider to be destructive behavior patterns are egomaniacs with inferiority complexes.
Right.
So that's where we're constantly looking to see how we're better than other people to make ourselves feel better.
Right.
Because we get that inferiority complex. But we're also, you know, we're looking at both people who we think are doing better than us and people who are doing worse. And it's this very strange place to be in.
Yeah.
And when you're not focusing on that, which I have some experience with, you know, serenity is possible and you can live peacefully and with less combative conversations.
So comparing yourself to others is one sign that your ego is in control. So the other ones, you feel jealous when other people do well. I think that kind of fits with what we just said. this one's interesting. You talk about yourself for 10 minutes before asking another person how they are.
Golly.
Yeah. So what I've found is this is the slickness of it, right? And in recovery, we're meant to feel our feelings, right? I feel mad. I feel sad. I feel angry. I got to feel that. And I got to communicate that to somebody, right? I can't just sit in this and be alone in that.
Absolutely.
But sometimes the inadvertent result is we become self-centered. Because we're always thinking about our feelings and how we're feeling our feelings, and we want to communicate that to other people. And so we're, it's kind of like, you know, love others as you want to be loved, you know? And so if you can't get past yourself, then it's really hard to love other people, right?
Yeah.
So I see that as kind of how the ego can play tricks on us to get us to remain focused on ourselves, on our own thoughts and feelings. What you hear that when you're in some of these rooms is, you know, concentrate your thoughts on your own, on yourself. Right? Share about yourself. But I think inadvertently, the result is everything becomes about us, you know, and it almost can feed the selfish nature of an addict. Does that make sense to you?
So it absolutely does make sense. And I'll tell you my experience with that.
All right.
So I was told early on that if I wanted to keep this gift of sobriety and recovery, I was going to have to give it away one day.
Yeah.
So that was basically something that, you know, I embraced. And so I've been blessed with the opportunity to have a variety of avenues to work with other people who are suffering and struggling. And I almost jump at those opportunities.
Yeah.
Because for me, it might be a little self-serving, but that's insurance on this gift I have.
Right.
That's how I keep it. So early on when people are trying to get sober or people are trying to put down these destructive ways of life, they typically will come in and they have a lot to share about their misery and their suffering.
Yeah.
But what you notice over time, once they get all that out, because we come in with a lot of baggage, a lot of garbage that's got to be discussed and processed and a lot of it done away with, they start to take an interest in others.
Right.
And so the conversation over the years starts changing. And one of the guys that I think about who mentored one of my mentors, you know, I think it was said he was, when he was suffering with cancer, you'd ask him, how's he doing?
Mm-hmm.
And he'd be like, I'm great. How are you? And so, you know, that's at one end of the spectrum. That's after years and decades of work probably.
Yeah.
And
I have somebody that was very much that same, dealing with cancer, and you'd ask him, how are you doing? He'd say, well, better now that you're here. What's up? How are you doing?
Yeah.
Yeah. That was their, it's this ability to, you know, now that can also be a defense mechanism, right?
depending on, I guess, what's behind it.
Right. Like, sure. I think myself that part of the thing that, and again, this is rigorous honesty, right? That I'm just putting out there, but part of the thing is that, I think that when if I can focus on someone else and their issues, that I have the ability to kind of, circumvent my own issues. Right.
Right. So you had something that was next on there that
on the list.
Yeah. Let me look at it real quick.
Uh huh.
Which one was it? So
what's up, y'all? You'd rather win than do your best.
Oh,
so I was having a conversation yesterday.
My son does that. He's like, oh, if I'm not going to win, I'm not going to play.
I was having a conversation yesterday with somebody, and I said, you know, when I'm working on a project, I may not be the most efficient, and I may not even be the best idea for the budget, but I'm going to give you all I got.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that, I think I've developed or cultivated a willingness to try and persevere in projects where it's not about winning or losing. It's about giving it all I've got and doing my best.
Right.
And so that's what I was thinking about when I saw that.
Yeah. I like this. You set impossible goals for yourself, and then you beat yourself up when you don't reach them. That is, that's my MO. That's it. That's all I do. That's like my, you know, I'm currently trying to work my way through that and get past that. But that's definitely something that I struggle with. To hear that it's the ego gives me some sense of hope, because, right, what it's saying to me, and I guess when we're talking about the ego, I guess you can look at it from like a psychological purely standpoint, but I'm looking at this ego with the knowledge or thinking that there's a spiritual being existing, coexisting, you know, in this dance between the spirit and the ego, right? This dance battle, this like break dance battle between the two of them, right? So I'm not seeing it existing in and of itself, that there's something that's existing within it. So that's really easy for me to do. So again, it's the ego is kind of, it's keeping you focused on yourself. And then you blame others when things don't get in your way. So that comes from, that whole list comes from simple, lifestrategies.com, and we'll post that on the website when we do the post the podcast. So here's a great quote again from Richard Rohr. Richard Rohr has done a lot of work on the ego and what he calls soul work or shadow boxing, which is great. Those are great terms. I love that, the imagery of those. So he says that the ego is part of the self that wants to be significant, central, and important by itself, apart from anybody else. It wants to be both separate and superior. It is defended and self-protected by its own very nature. It must eliminate the negative to succeed at this. The ego is what Jesus called an actor, usually translated from the Greek as a hypocrite. That's from Matthew 23. He calls the religious people back then, he called them, you hypocrites. So it kind of goes back to what you said with this congruent lifestyle. What I think, what I do.
What I think, what I say.
And what I do. That they all align.
Yeah.
And here the point that Richard Rohr is making is that when you have this hypocritical, this acting out, you're acting and pretending to be this certain thing that you're really not, that's a sure sign of the ego kind of playing itself out. Right? Some of it, I think, comes from this idea that you can't be less than perfect, especially in religious type of settings, right? Where piety and holiness is so looked at as valuable, good things, and not to say they're not, but it almost kind of sets up this, I don't know, value system that says, well, if you're still struggling with this, you're still dealing with this, then you're less. You're not as qualified. You're not as important. You've missed. What happened? You lost it?
Died.
Phone died?
Yeah.
We still got one going.
That's good.
Bryant's watching. What's up, Bryant? And so, tell me, like, share with me, like, because I know that coming into sobriety, right, you have to deal with all that junk that's stored up. You have to start dealing with it piece by piece. But then you get clean, all right? Because I want you to explain a specific thing. Because then you get clean, but you haven't gone through everything, right? Maybe it's your first round on the steps, right? Maybe there's a couple things you left off. Maybe you're, I don't know. But you continue to grow as we grow. So what are some ways that you can kind of say, all right, this part of me is not there yet. I'm still dealing with this. How do you bring that to light? And then how do you deal with it? What's your experience with that?
Well, my experience with that is that I was first blessed with this instruction that I was to benefit from striving for progress, not perfection.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty quickly, I was able to give myself a break. And there was a point in time where I went through my character defects. Some people might call them sins, but basically patterns of behavior I have that are not ideal. Maybe self-destructive, maybe destructive toward others, selfish, so forth and so on. So things that are not self-serving in a benevolent way. And it became pretty clear that at some level, like, I had them all.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be important to work on the worst things first. And the worst thing that I was dealing with at the current moment was that I was using substances to destroy myself.
Right.
And not even intentionally. You know, I wanted to live, but once I was addicted, I was really powerless.
Right.
And so whether I wanted to or not, I was going to continue to destroy my health.
Well, take me to like year two.
Okay. So here's what happened. So I identified pretty much everything in the book that I was guilty of, you know, exhibiting. And so the first step with, you know, many problems is identifying you got the problem.
Right.
So I identified, yeah, pretty much every problem you can have, like, I've got it. So I need to work on all this.
Right.
So that's where we start talking about it. And then I get a chance annually, semi-annually, every so often to revisit this list. And luckily I look at it and I'm like, wow, you know, I'm not actually stealing from people anymore. So that's incredible. Mm-hmm. That's great. This one is pretty much under wraps. But then, you know, maybe I'm being a workaholic. Maybe mm-hmm. I'm not spending enough time with my loved ones.
Mm-hmm.
So then I'll work on that one. And then...
But now you're not working on it alone.
No. No, I seek counsel and basically find people in this world who have what I want and who are living a life that is in line with the life I want to live.
Right.
And so I'll run the stuff by them. And there's an ebb and a flow and a balance with a lot of this stuff. So I have personally taken a route where I don't focus primarily on financial gain. And the flip side to that, and the tricky part, is that it's more easy to be irresponsible with money because there's less of it. And so budgeting has become something that I've been working on a lot. So it's almost like whack-a-mole, you know, I'm a workaholic, I'm overworking. Typically that comes with more money. So you kind of hit that whack-a-mole. You're familiar with the whack-a-mole game.
Yeah.
And then the other one pops up. Oh, well, you know, you're struggling with meeting some responsibilities financially. So you kind of work on that and the workaholism might step up a little bit. So there are some of them that are very closely interrelated, and it's just a fine tuning process. It's like a polishing process, like a rock polisher.
Yeah.
Some people call it peeling back layers of the onion.
Yeah.
You know, we'll work on it. And then we'll work on something else, and then it pops back up. And so I feel like I'll never be anywhere near perfect,
mm-hmm.
but I'm moving in the right direction, and that's good enough for me.
Okay. Yeah. But you have a venue, a place to do this in.
Several.
Right.
So
that's what's key.
Some of it comes...
You have a community or a tribe or...
Or tribes.
Tribes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then there's specific people who are kind of allowed in to this area.
Yeah, and people are the vital component here. I can't do this alone. Without help, without a lot of help, I wouldn't be sitting here.
Right.
No way. I'd be in a cell. Probably yeah. best case scenario.
Yeah.
For a long time.
So we're talking about ego. And in abstract sense, kind of. So I like this quote. It kind of comes back to what you were saying. And this is from Rob Bell. He says, opening up your soul to someone, letting them into your spirit, thoughts, fears, futures, hopes, dreams, that is being naked. And I think that that rings true for me, right? But what's really interesting, and I guess, because I've just recently kind of had these revelations of going, wow, my ego has secretly been kind of pulling the strings when I thought I'd kind of got past that, you know? So where I've thought, man, I'm completely naked in this situation. I'm completely open and honest, you know, that there was still this ego was still kind of tricking myself into thinking and, you know, like, acts of piety, acts of like loving others and caring for others. Right. I mean, it's like doing the right things for the wrong reasons sometimes, you know, like the desire to be seen and be known.
Yeah.
Now there's a very intimate thing about the divine self, myself, my true self. I'm designed and wired to be known, right? That's the way humans are created. We are created to be in community with other people. And so being created like that, there's this really, you said benevolent. I like that word. This benevolent kind of need that's there, but the ego can kind of take that and then kind of twist it. To say, and I think that this is what, when you look at, Jesus talks about, don't let your right hand know what your left hand's doing. Have you heard this? Jesus is on some new shit from way back in the day. So he's like, if you know, you do a good deed, you know, don't let your right hand know what your left hand's doing, you know? And I think part of the reason why is because he knows that the ego is at play here and that the ego is going to try and take every good act and try and turn it into some kind of personal gain, that the ego is going to try and take every good, kind thing that you do and turn it into something that it can build its own kingdom on.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So don't let the left hand know what the right is. Like, that's really hard to do. And aside from them in the recovery community, I don't know that I've been taught those skills in my faith, how to actually do that.
Yeah, that kind of blows my mind. I can imagine that what you're saying makes sense. It reminds me of something I heard very early on. I was working with this counselor, and there are moments in early recovery that I remember that I know, or at least I feel that I know, that without those, I wouldn't have made it. And so one of my counselors, he looked at me one day and said, you know, I've been down this path. You know, I had a horrific cocaine addiction. And I'm looking at this man who's well-dressed, professional, well-spoken, and clearly helping others. And I know in that instant that he's got the solution. And so very likely no doctor who hadn't been an addict themselves would have been able to help me. But in that moment, you know, one addict sharing with another,
yeah,
whether it was a professional setting or not, carried a lot of depth and weight. And what he said to me, he said, at every level, there's a new devil.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I think you're describing, where yeah. you think you've gotten past all this.
Right.
And I'm sitting here keenly aware of my own shortcomings
yeah.
and how I've become very good at spotting the new devil at the new level.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, man, he's in the middle of it. And
yeah.
That was a very helpful realization that I luckily made early on. And I don't know that people really get that advice, but yeah. I look for it now. Because I know no matter where I'm at, 20 years from now, I'm going to be doing great. There's something that's going to get me if I'm not careful. And I need to know that I'm likely never going to be cured. So I've always got to stay vigilant. Right. And I've got to keep doing the things that keep me strong or growing or spiritually aware.
Yeah. Nice. The last thing I had on this topic was thinking about the ego, that it, this is an ebb and flow, and it's kind of what you described, is that, you know, there's a ancient kind of proverb where these three disciples come to their abbot and their teacher, and they and there's two abbots there, and they ask,
what's an abbot?
An abbot is like their rabbi, their teacher, right? So they go to him and they say, you know, teach us to understand. And he says, okay, well, what does the scripture say here? And tell me what it means. And so each one of them responds with what they think it means. One says, this is what it means. Goes to the next one. What does it mean? This is what it means. Third one. No, this is what it means. And so this abbot looks to his fellow abbot, his fellow teacher, and he says, what about you? What does this scripture mean? And the other abbot says, I have no idea. And he says, haha,
you, I love that.
You know.
Yeah.
You know, because you know that you don't really fully understand.
Yeah, I connect with that.
And in not having, not knowing, the thing is that we want to define things. We want to pin things down and we want to fix them. And that's just our human, that's part of our ego. That's just part of our nature. We want to fix and move on. But when it comes to spirituality, when it comes to things of the soul, that oftentimes mystery and wonder and things that are very unclear, they happen a lot, you know? And to acknowledge and say, okay, this happens, and that's okay. And it's okay if I'm not okay, but I'm not going to stay that way. I'm going to continue to move on. And even though I may look at this and say, I don't know, that's actually kind of the beginning of being able to actually know, right? Because then you allow the possibility of what that thing very much could mean to you.
So on our last podcast, we talked about this ancient proverb. And the understanding was that the wise man doesn't always know if something's good or bad.
Right.
And so it was around that time when I realized one of the greatest strengths I had was that I knew that I don't know much.
Yeah.
And that leaves me open to learn, because for me, there's nothing more dangerous than knowing what's good for me. And there was a point in time where I was doing what I knew was good for me and what was right for my life. And I ended up in a lockdown facility with no shoelaces.
Right.
So when I had to look at that and say that,
right,
my best thinking got me in a position where I'm being told by medical health professionals that I'm going to be dead or in prison before the end of the year if I don't get my act straight. That was humbling in a way where when I learned from wiser men that, you know, we don't know everything and mm-hmm. we might not even know that much, it left me open to hear you. Because I know that maybe what I'm thinking about what you're saying may not be true. So I want to listen to what you've got to say.
Right.
And maybe I'll learn something that will help me understand that my preconceived notions may not have been true.
Yeah.
And so being open-minded for me has been indispensable to continue growing spiritually.
Yeah. All right. So I'm going to end one more thing I want to end on. Because I feel like I have to tie this in. It's a perfect opportunity to edify my fellow believers. If I don't lose track of what the thought was essentially that, you know, 500 years ago, there was a thing in the Christian faith called the Reformation. And that's when a Catholic priest basically was like, I'm reading this stuff. I don't think it means what you guys think it means. I don't like the way you guys are doing this. People were, they were charging people to have their sins removed, right? So some foul things. And then there was just interpretations of scripture that he had that he was like, this doesn't match. So he basically, you know, catapulted this new way of thinking. It's the Reformed Church. It's basically the version of Christianity we have now kind of comes out of this act that he did, right? Where he kind of wrote, made his case, and he nailed it to the door of the church and was like, now let's talk about it. Let's go into the common area and let's talk. We're going to talk about it, right? And so during that time, 500 years ago, you could have been on one of two sides, right? Or on various different sides. You could have been on the one side that's been like, no, this is what it means. This is how we do it. And what you're saying is different. It's heretical and it's wrong. Done. So I'm not even going to hear your argument. Or you could have been on the other side that said, what do you have to say? What's the possibility of truth in what you have to say? Right? And it's those people of our faith at that time, 500 years ago, that said, oh, what's the possibility? Is why, you know, Christianity has become what it has become, because it was reformed, it changed, it moved. And one of the biggest things that I see in our faith today, especially on social media, not so much one-to-one, but on social media from fellow believers, is this is it. This is how it works. We figured it out. And anything that's contrary to that is, they use the word heretical, which is just means, you know, it's an opinion of its own, right? It's outside, doesn't fit, you're out. And I would like to see more of this kind of wonder, this awe, this mystery, to say maybe God can't be contained in our understanding. Maybe there is something to benefit from having conversation. And maybe there's something to benefit by looking at the ego and saying, has ego hijacked my recovery? Has ego hijacked my faith? And if it has, what can we do about it?
What was that guy's name who nailed that thing to the...
Martin Luther.
That's right. I've heard of him.
Yeah. No, seriously.
Like, he was open-minded.
Yeah. Well, it was very challenging for him to do that. He had to go against his whole faith. He had to go against, you know, so this was a really rough thing. It took a lot of guts for him to do this, you know?
Well, it sounds like he may have been onto something, because I don't know much, but I know charging people for helping them process their sins may not have been ideal from a church standpoint.
Right. Yeah. So everything we've talked about, at least whatever we've borrowed from the internet, is on there. It's going to be on the link for this podcast, so you can check it out, themosthighshow.com. And we have a number, which I don't have. Wait, let's see if we can pull up the number as I pull up the website here. So you can message us, DM us, all those fancy things. 657-464-7159. And if you want to participate in this conversation, thank you to everybody who is signed on live through this process. Thank you, Mitchell. Pronounced with the Itchel.
Thank you, Christian.
What up, Lucy? What's up, Dawn? Thank you, guys. And I think the best sign off for this one is your ego
is not your amigo.
It's not your amigo. All right.